tonight on the Daily Debrief.
You didn't have a weird feeling you were going to get caught? Uh-huh. What gave you that weird feeling?
A boyfriend takes murderous revenge against the mother who abused his girlfriend. Plus, a co-defendant's bizarre testimony in a stop sign stabbing incident. And inside the secret tunnels of accused drug lord El Chapo as his federal trial moves into its second day. That's straight ahead on the Daily Debrief for Wednesday, November 14th.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Debrief. Let's go straight to Springfield, Missouri, where a man is accused of traveling into town, murdering his online girlfriend's mother, and then fleeing the state. Nicholas Godejean is facing first-degree murder charges related to the death of Claudine Blanchard. She went by the nickname Dee Dee and died in 2015 at age 48. The victim's daughter, Gypsy Blanchard, was dating the defendant. She was in on it and pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. She's serving a 10-year sentence. Prosecutors went soft on her because her mother had abused her. In a detailed confession, Nicholas Godejean said the murder was Gypsy's idea, but that he would do anything for her.
It's not fair to Gypsy for her to be honest and you to lie, okay? So what I want to know is, can you tell me this first? Did Gypsy know that you were going to kill her mother?
Honestly, she asked me to.
Okay. So Gypsy knew you were going to do it because Gypsy asked you to.
Yes.
Why did she ask you to do that?
Because she felt it was her only way to be with me.
Okay. She felt like if you killed the mom, then that's the only way she could be with you.
Yeah.
Do you know the mom's name?
I don't know her real name. All I know is she goes by Dee Dee.
Dee Dee. Okay. So, has Gypsy asked you to kill anyone else?
No.
Okay. She just wants you to kill her mom.
Yes.
Okay. And how did Gypsy ask you to do that? Did she ask you to do that in a text message, on a Facebook, or in person, or something different?
Well, it was more than once. I mean, you had Facebook. We would talk about it on there. We would talk about it even on texts.
Okay.
The truth is, okay, I'll admit it. I did actually stab her. I will admit it. The only reason I did it is because I did it for me and her. That's the real reason I did it. I would have never did it if it was not for me and her.
Okay. So you wouldn't have done it if somebody else would have asked?
No. Okay. There's no way I would have did it for anyone else.
Okay, so you just
I truly do worship her to the point there's nothing I want to do for her.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think you've proved that, right?
Yes.
I think that you've proved that you do what she asked you to do.
Godejean admitted stabbing the mother in that interrogation. He then described using a code to signal to Gypsy that the evil deed was done. He said it was all planned out.
Okay, so what was the code again?
It was three knocks and then two scratches.
Okay, three knocks, two scratches. And then that was so that way she would know in the bathroom. That was so Gypsy would know that it was you and not her mom.
Yep.
Okay, and did you guys plan that out before?
We went back and forth between more than one idea, but that would end up being the one that you stick with.
Okay. After that happens, after you do the three knocks and the two scratches, does she open the door?
Not right away.
Okay, what happens?
She wanted to save her private part.
Okay.
And her legs.
Okay, she wanted to shave her private part and her legs?
Yes.
Yes, Godejean told police the murder led to a naked cleanup session, which ultimately led to sex.
And so where'd you guys have sex at?
In her bedroom.
In
her bed.
Her bed. In
yes.
Gypsy's bed.
Yes.
Okay.
The biggest thing I can remember about is that it was full, and I mean full, of stuffed animals.
Okay.
Gosh.
How did you guys have sex on the bed if there was a bunch of stuffed animals?
We threw it all in off of it.
Okay.
You're just
throwing them off onto the floor? Or?
Yeah, onto the floor.
Former federal prosecutor Francie Hakes is on the Debrief tonight. Francie, good to see you again.
You too, Aaron. Thanks
for having
me.
Okay, so murder then sex. This cannot be going over very well with the jury.
No, you know, it's interesting, though, Aaron. This guy does not come off as a cold-blooded killer. He does come off as someone who just does not understand what he has just done.
I agree with that, but look, I mean, we know that this defendant is on the autism spectrum. We know that that seems to be coming through in his interviews here. We know that the defense is going to press that. Does that play into to the way that this interrogation should have rolled out?
Well, that's a great question, Aaron. I mean, I think that the police needed to understand that, but he seems perfectly able to carry on a conversation. He understands what they're saying. He's giving details. I don't think there's any question but that he understood what they were talking about. My worry is that the jury is going to see that and feel sympathy toward him.
That's an interesting perspective because I've sat in trials not dissimilar to this, and jurors take it and say, hey, wait a minute. Well, perhaps you have this diagnosis. Perhaps you're on the spectrum. Perhaps there's some other diagnosis, just to sort of draw the specter of a stereotypical trial like this. And jurors will turn around and say, you know what, so what? So what that you have that on the side here? You also committed this act.
And it's a heinous murder. And it is a brutal murder. Stabbing is a very personal way to kill someone. And it involves a lot of rage. And so it is inconsistent with the personality that he's showing the police officer. So I'll be interested to see how the defense spins it.
I will as well. Let's go back to the interrogation. The defendant said he had a good side and an evil side, and that Gypsy Blanchard had many sides whom she gave different names.
The thing is, the good side of me originally refused to do it.
Okay.
And that's the reason why it was instant that it happened right away.
Okay.
Because my evil side is what actually did it.
Okay. Your evil side was with you when you made the decision to get on the bus and
I agree with you on that.
Okay. And your evil side was with you whenever you decided to clean up your blood from the house.
Yep.
Okay. But. And not, you didn't kill Gypsy, so your good side must have been there too, because you didn't kill Gypsy, because you love her, right?
Actually, it's because the Gypsy likes to call her more, I'm guessing her mom didn't really know about this side of her, but she has an evil side of herself as well, just to call her Ruby. That's what she likes to call her.
Okay.
But one of the things he said to her is, never get between me and Ruby, is what he said, because I guess that there's more than one of the sides of each other that is in love with each other. So I got one side of her, his name is Kitty, it's like a little girl inside of her. You got another one called Candy.
Is this like some kind of sex thing that you guys do?
No.
Many different names for many different personalities, apparently. Well, the interrogator faced tough cross-examination on her methods and her training.
Are you aware of any autism protocol at the Greene County Sheriff's Department?
No, sir.
Is that a no?
No, sir.
Have you had any training in autism on how to handle suspects who may be on the autism spectrum?
No, sir.
You have any general mental health training?
Yes, sir. I do have some that were mandated to take through the sheriff's office.
And have you taken any classes on how to interrogate suspects who may be mentally ill or have disabilities?
It depends on the disability. If they're deaf, we can get like someone into sign. If they can't talk, we could have them write and things like that.
Have you ever read the Reed interrogation manual?
I went through the process in the training that I went to.
And so it's part of the training?
Yes, sir. They provide you a book.
And is there a Sheriff's Department policy regarding Mirandizing a special needs person?
Not that I'm aware of.
So you treat everybody the same, assuming they speak the English language, is that correct?
Some people require a little extra assistance getting through a Miranda form. Sometimes you'll have somebody that can't read, you'll have to help them with that. So if there is a need and it's recognizable, we do try to address that.
Back to Francie Hakes for some analysis on this topic. Francie, this reads like a script of bullet points of all of the hot topics with juvenile confessions, don't you think?
It is. It certainly brings up Making a Murderer, Brendan Dassey. You think about whether or not this particular defendant was so unsophisticated that he needed special handling. That's certainly what the defense is going to argue. They're going to say that he just was trying to please his interrogator, who didn't understand him or his confession. Therefore, somehow it's invalid and they shouldn't consider it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the Reid technique is the way that officers are trained to ask questions, at least in the United States, to try to get information and assure that it's correct. It's come under a lot of criticism in recent years, especially with juvenile confessions, where the courts have said, look, officers have to use special care when they're dealing with someone who's younger or who may be diagnosed with something like autism, for instance.
That's very true, Aaron, and there's a reason for that. We want to make sure that confessions, to the extent we get a confession, is freely and voluntarily given. That is, they understand the consequences of what they're doing, they waive their right to be silent and to have an attorney present, and they understand the consequences of that. And things can be different for different people based upon their education and their mental status and their ability to understand if they have some other kind of disability.
It certainly, though, we have DNA tests that came in later on that corroborated much of the events in the confession. We also have these text messages that are being played in court as we speak between the defendant and his girlfriend. So there's a lot for prosecutors to work with.
There's a lot of evidence in this case, Aaron, and I think that the prosecutors have a good, strong case against him. I think the only question really in this case is going to be the matter of what degree of murder do they find him guilty of.
We will check back in with you at the end of the broadcast, Francie Hakes. We're going to dial back to some of yesterday's opening statements, though, now, where Nick Godejohn's defense attorney pointed to the autism diagnosis and a number of other issues involving the defendant. Remember, though, folks, the Dee Dee Blanchard kept subjecting her daughter, Gypsy, to unnecessary medical treatments. The defense says that those treatments caused Gypsy to snap, dragging Nick into that plot.
Gypsy was heartbroken. She wanted her mom to accept Nick, and her mom described Nick as creepy. Gypsy knew there was only one way she was going to be able to spend a life with Nick. There was only one way to get out from under the grasp of her mother, and that was to kill her mother. Gypsy formulated this plan, and she wavered on it for a while. She was committed to it. Later, she decided, no, that's not the right thing. Nick was happy to do whatever Gypsy wanted. He was always compliant. And finally, Gypsy said, it's getting worse here. This has to be done. She stole some more money from her mother, provided that to Nick to come down on a bus and stay in a hotel. She stole a knife from Walmart so that Nick could use that as the murder weapon, and provided Nick with gloves and tape and everything he would need to go through with her plan.
The defense side of the Nick Godejohn case. Still ahead, though, tonight here on the Daily Debrief. The defense has the case of a Florida man accused of manslaughter after a stop sign stabbing incident. Plus, day two of the federal criminal trial of accused drug lord El Chapo. We take you into his underground tunnels after the break here on the Debrief. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. Objections to opening statements in the biggest U.S. federal prosecution to date of an accused drug lord. Joaquin Guzman is better known as El Chapo, and he's on trial on a series of charges in U.S. District Court. He's accused of smuggling nearly a half million pounds of cocaine into the United States. Chief Investigative Correspondent Brian Ross is here to discuss this big objection. Brian, it's rare to get a strong objection like this to something like opening statements.
Absolutely. As we talked last night, the lawyer for El Chapo, Frederick Luckman, created a defense that essentially put the U.S. government and the Mexican government on trial, claiming to the jury, you will see, you'll have to change your minds. There's another side of the story, an uglier side of the story. Be prepared to accept that Mexican and U.S. officials at the highest levels are bribed, that DEA law enforcement agents from the U.S. are crooked. The prosecution objects strongly, and this morning filed a motion with the judge asking him to strike all of that opening argument, saying that the opening statement's not supposed to be argument, it's supposed to be a roadmap of the case.
You know, it's a fine line. I'm really curious to see how it's going to roll out. But we also have evidence being presented in court today, and we have these secret tunnels that
that's
came
right
out in court.
And by the way, the judge refused to strike it, so
okay,
that stands. The jury has heard that. But as they began to present their case today, the prosecution introduced a tape that was made several decades ago, U.S. Customs agents showing one of El Chapo's original tunnels. This is right on the border with the U.S. He built this deep tunnel, way in, very sophisticated, to bring hundreds and hundreds of pounds of marijuana. And in fact, the agents saw that he had this incredible hydraulic lift, as you see here, that lifted up the secret entrance. Very sophisticated. The prosecution says he used tunnels like this, he used submarines, airplanes, trains, that he was extremely adept at finding ways to smuggle drugs into this country.
It's incredible to see the infrastructure, but then look at the money attached to it.
Absolutely. This guy was supposedly worth $14 billion by the end of his criminal career.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see where the defense goes now that the defense has to march along trying to convince the jury that all these federal officials have somehow been bribed.
That's right. That's the alternative theory. And in fact, they say the real leader of the Sinaloa cartel is still in Mexico, and his brother was on the stand today.
I know you will continue to follow the trial. Chief Investigative Correspondent Brian Ross. Time now for a check of other incidents making headlines with Anthony Velez.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on longcrime.com and across the country. A man in Mississippi, allegedly under the influence of alcohol, is under arrest after he reportedly drove his pickup truck into a courthouse to report his drugs were stolen. 28-year-old Keith Cavalier was quite cavalier when he reportedly crashed his vehicle into the Harrison County Courthouse to report his missing drugs, allegedly because he thought it was the best way to let authorities know of the crime. No one was hurt in the crash, and Cavalier now faces charges of driving under the influence and malicious mischief. The mother of slain University of Utah student Lauren McCluskey is calling on authorities to prosecute the person who loaned a gun to her daughter's killer. McCluskey was killed by her ex-boyfriend, 37-year-old Melvin Rowland, a registered sex offender who allegedly fatally shot McCluskey as she spoke to her mother on the phone near a dormitory on campus. Rowland was found dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound in the Trinity AME Church in Salt Lake City. Rowland was convicted of attempted forcible sex abuse and enticing a minor over the internet in 2004 and was registered as a sex offender. Authorities claim an unidentified friend of Rowland lent him the gun, but was unaware of his criminal history. Authorities in California are searching for a woman caught on camera assaulting a McDonald's employee after becoming enraged when she reportedly didn't receive enough ketchup with her order. The unidentified woman stormed inside of the restaurant in Santa Ana and attacked the unidentified employee after she was unhappy with the alleged condiment diss. An unidentified man can be seen entering the restaurant and left with the woman. The suspect remains at large. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
Let's head to Florida now, folks, where defendant Armando Baptista faces manslaughter charges in what's been described as a road rage stabbing. Victim Fakhreddin Knight went by the nickname Mohammed. He was on his way home from a party with girlfriend Wendy Gambolis when he lost his life. Defendants Armando Baptista and Demetrius Elder were stopped at a stop sign. When Knight pulled up, the car would not move. Knight honked his horn, but still nothing happened. What happened next is a big he said, she said, but it resulted in Knight being stabbed and killed. The first witness for the defense was co-defendant Demetrius Elder today. That defense really wants to know if the fight at the stop sign was simply a spillover from an earlier disagreement at a party where everyone was hanging out that night.
Do you see any interactions with Muhammad with anybody at the party?
Yeah, so when he first showed up to the party, you know, he spoke to everybody, gave everybody that he knew, which is everybody except me and March. After that, him and Corey walked into Corey's house for like a minute or so. And then they came out. When he came out, the first person he wanted to speak to was Armando, was March.
Okay.
And he had a conversation with March for a minute, less than a minute, maybe, or whatever. And then he went to speak to Walter.
Okay.
Spoke to Walter for a few minutes.
This is Muhammad that went to speak with Walter?
Yes. And okay. He spoke to Walter for a few minutes, and then he walked back over and spoke to March again.
Okay.
While he was speaking to March the second time, Walter came up to me, told me to leave, so I left.
What was exactly what Walter said to you?
Why did you bring this around here? You don't even know we've been set up.
When he said this N-word, who was he referring to?
March.
What did you take that to mean?
That I shouldn't be there.
Objection calls for speculation.
Sustained.
What did you do at that point?
Grab March and left.
So, Demetrius Elder went on to describe the stabbing after that. He refers to defendant Armando Baptista here as Mondo.
So, March is still screaming, and I'm still trying to pull the guy off of March, and then I notice there's a knife on the floorboard. I pick the knife up, and again, I try to pull this guy off of Armando, but I can't. He's not budging. So, then March starts screaming again, saying this guy's trying to kill me, he's trying to cut my throat. At that time, I didn't know what to do, so I took the knife and I stabbed him in the back.
How many times did you stab him?
Just one time.
What did Muhammad do when you did that?
At that point, he let go of March and got out. He looked at me and mumbled something, and then he started walking toward the car that I guess that he came from.
Okay, what did you do?
I got back in the car and drove off.
What did Armando do?
He just shut his door.
Did Armando ever get out of the car that night?
No.
No?
No.
Back to Francie Hakes here tonight. Francie, look, I'm getting confused based on this co-conspirator's testimony. He's already been convicted of a lesser included charge. But look, did I hear that correctly? He says that Elder never, or Elder, I should say, says Baptista never got out of the car at all. And that he only stabbed the victim one time. Well, the victim had way more than one stab wounds, and all the other witnesses are saying, no, the defendant, Baptista, was out of the car doing things that evening.
Yeah, you're right, Aaron. It was confusing. I had to really sit there and think, am I hearing this right? But he is completely exculpating Baptista. He is saying that he was the one who did at least some of the stabbing. Mysteriously, as you note, only one time does he claim he stabbed him, even though the victim was stabbed multiple times, but that Baptista never even got out of the car. So he is taking the fact that he has already been convicted of a lesser included, cannot be retried for anything other than possibly obstruction or perjury, which I guess he's probably not worried about after facing a murder charge.
Yeah.
And he's saying he did it all and Baptista should walk free.
Yeah, Francie, we've got to wrap up. That's all the time we have for today. We will see you back here tomorrow, same time, same place, with the Daily Debrief. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.